Welcome to Tip TV Finance with me, Jenny Hammond, and Zach Meir here. And we've also got in the studio Mark Oswald, who's from ADM Investment Services. So first off, Mark, anything of note before we go to the slides?
Yes, I mean, it's obviously payrolls day today in the US. It's very much overshadowed by the presidential election, which has brought us all this volatility or rise in volatility to financial markets as people try and work out who's going to come out on top. So that sort of puts the US labour numbers in the shade for the moment. However, they are important in terms of what happens with the Fed in December. Unfortunately, one has to say when one looks at the forecasts, they're pretty boring. You're looking at a payrolls gain of 175,000, which would be way above the break-even rate for growth. The anecdotal evidence, rather mixed in terms of we had the ADP report, which was below expectations, but the revised previous month very sharply higher. Perhaps more importantly, there may be some headwinds coming from Hurricane Matthew, because that happened during survey week. So any weakness may actually not necessarily be an indication that the labour demand is weakening. Wages expected to pick up month on month up to 0.3, which would leave the year-on-year rate 2.6. Overall, I think markets probably would like a number which is boring, because they're far too focused on the presidential election, and they don't need something to upend what is already fragile sentiment.
Was there anything that could, any figure that could divert the Fed from raising rates in December, which I don't believe is going to happen, but, you know.
Certainly, I think if we saw a weak wage number combined with, say, a weak payrolls number, when I say weak payrolls, I do really mean something, it's going to have to be 100,000 or below. You know, low 100s, you're still way above the break-even rate, which is 80 to 100,000. So that's the sort of weakness. The other side of the coin is if we get anything around the 200,000 mark, the pressure would genuinely be on the Fed.
And investors are already reacting to a possible rate rise in America, aren't they? Pulling money out, we're seeing that, even if you think it's not happening.
Certainly, if you look at the safe haven flows that we've seen this week, it's been very noticeable that long-term interest rates have not actually, long-term bond yields, which would normally be deemed a bit of a safe haven, have really not got the trip at all, underlining that while people are being somewhat defensive, the one thing they're not doing is rushing into bonds. Mind you, why would you at these sort of levels, given that 10-year nominal yields are way below inflation, 2.3%. So where's the attraction?
Okay, so let's move on to the slides now. So first up, we have the most popular in business and finance. Shell CFO Simon Henry claims oil demand could peak in 5 years. Do you have any thoughts on this? Do you think that's likely?
I think it actually, the intention, given the Paris Climate Agreement, is to basically bury most of the oil that we've got underground as soon as possible. It could start happening sooner.
Yeah. Well, according to the IB Times UK, it's at odds with industry peers. Oil giant Shell's finance chief warns crude demand will peak before supply. CBI businesses want spades in the ground to boost competitiveness. And the CBI has warned that UK competitiveness is at risk unless the country commits to improving its core infrastructure. And that's according to Sky News. Okay, on to the next slide. Okay, commentary here. Bloomberg reports that the European Parliament will vote on the 10th of November whether to ignore new Basel Committee banking supervision rules that have been agreed internationally and should come into force within the next year or so. New rules aiming to avoid another 2008-style financial meltdown reassesses the way loan books are measured in terms of their riskiness and how much capital should be put aside for this. European banks are likely to be the hardest hit, as they currently claim all too many of their assets are practically risk-free. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all the regulations is backward-looking. They're not forward-looking. Secondly, the regulations that we've introduced in the meantime have basically migrated a lot of the bank balance sheet risk from the bank balance, from bank balance sheets to the fund sector. And thirdly, yes, the European banks are the most vulnerable because they actually haven't done anything about resolving their balance sheet problems since 2008. Or rather, they are just starting now, 5 to 7 years too late.
Okay, next slide, please. Okay, economic calendar, a lot happening in the US. You mentioned earlier about unemployment rates. We've got the change in non-farm payrolls and average hourly earnings. So anything we should be aware of there?
Well, aside from what I mentioned before, the other feature of the day is we do get the first round of Fed speak today since the FOMC meeting. So we've got Lockhart, we've got the super dove and very politically motivated Ms. Brainard, and we also have Mr. Kaplan. However, I think the Fed is really minded not to offer any signals until we get past that election risk.
Okay, things happening in Canada, unemployment rate and net change in employment, and US ISM non-manufacturing composite, the Fed Lockhart to speak at Realtors in Orlando, and Bank of England Kirsten Forbes speaks in Washington. What do you think will come out of this?
Well, the question for Ms. Forbes is, if she's so vehemently opposed to the QE, and she knew she was in the minority yesterday, why didn't she vote against it again? Why did she actually vote to allow it to continue it? You know, her argument was, we don't want to upset the apple cart. Well, it doesn't matter. You wouldn't have upset it because you would have been in a minority. So I really don't understand where the Bank of England's going at the moment. Their forecasts yesterday certainly very much underclubbing the inflation risks that are here in the UK. You're looking at 4% CPI at a bare minimum, as the NIESR suggested. Looking at where the UK's manufacturing PMI input price index, you're looking at something much closer to 5%, in fact, and we are starting to see some signs of inflation coming through.
Isn't the good thing about all these forecasts is they're not normally wrong, so we shouldn't worry too much. The other point is, let's say if you've got this slow Brexit or delayed Brexit, we'll have the pound going back up again, and that inflationary scare, the Marmite Gate scare, might actually go away. You have the pound at 135, against the dollar, a lot of that goes out of it, doesn't it?
Well, that would be the hope. But that said, what we're doing at the moment is we've recovered from 120 to 125-ish. Where we've come from is a lot higher than that. And I think given the political risks, rallies in the pound are probably likely to be capped, probably a little above where we are at the moment.
Do you actually think that yesterday's event was probably the worst thing that could happen?
In terms of the Article 50?
We might need to have another election, or there's so many things that can go wrong now.
Actually, I think it was manna from heaven for Mrs. May, because they haven't got a plan at the moment. They don't know what they want to propose in terms of negotiations, what issues are the key ones for them. So having this delay, rather than putting it to Parliament, and once it goes to Parliament, she just said, OK, we'll just accept that as face value, we'll put it to parliamentary vote, then you've automatically got a trigger. And that's exactly what she doesn't want to do. She wants as much time as possible to prepare for the negotiations and then trigger, I think, probably in the end of Q1 next year.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time, so let's move on to the next slide. Okay, so anything you see here, Zach?
It's the same, roughly the same thing as it's been all week here. People are still are bearish of euro sterling, which looks as though it's a much better trade than it's been for the last month or so. They are long, still maintaining their longs in gold and silver, although they're probably about 10% less bullish now on gold now that it's hit $1,300. But more, it's basically a continuation. Probably we'll see any changes after the economic data this afternoon.
Okay, next slide, please. Okay, euro pound, breach of rising trend line from June lows points to a correction. Any thoughts?
Well, that's what the Oanda clients have been short from most of the way up on that chart. It does look like a double top. It does also look as though there'll be a bit of a fallback towards 87 pence, which was old resistance, even if we then go back up again. There's a gap on the chart there towards 86. So I would agree with that trade today.
Let's move on to the next slide. Okay, so broker forecast, anything that catches your eye there? I know that you're not so thrilled about Barclay Energy.
Well, no, FinCap, they're under review. They're a bit busy at the moment and they'll get back to us. So that's why I actually got that out there. It's actually a great private investor favourite. It's a uranium miner in Spain. It's got a big asset there. So it's actually allegedly quite a good company to be invested in if you're looking for that alternative energy source. BAE Systems, I thought it was just a bit of fun there because if Trump wins, apparently defence stocks will be bid up, and Citigroup seem to be onto that tack already. And then Round Gold Resources, another Trump play if he comes in. We expect the gold price to rocket even more than it has at the moment. So far it's bounced $50. Share price of Round Gold at the moment, £70. So Jeffrey's target there of £95, quite chunky.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for us here. So we'll be back shortly with another interview. But thank you very much to you. And thanks, Zach.